Thank you, Dr. Martinez. So before we begin, I'd like to report that I do not have any relationships to disclose today. And to start, I thought I would set the scene and give you a little bit of information on Indiana's Latino population. So Indiana actually ranks 21st for overall Latino population in the U.S., but more interestingly, from 2000 to 2011, the Latino population had increased in all top 60 of the metropolitan areas. And Indianapolis was actually the metropolitan area that saw the highest Latino increase in that time period, at 197%. I also would like to point out that Indianapolis, as far as the state of Indiana, has much more of an emerging Latino population. As you can see from this map, there are other areas of Indiana that that do have a higher percentage of Latinos than the Indianapolis area and Marion County, even though Marion County does house the most Latinos in the state of Indiana. So just to set the scene a little bit for us here. So the study that I am going to share with you today was completed with a community partner, with the Latino Health Organization. And the Latino Health Organization is a nonprofit in Indianapolis that serves the Latino community. And it was a team of two community partners and three academics. My two academic colleagues are here today, and we'll be happy to help answer questions that you guys will have. So now let's start with a little bit of background for this study. So much of the research that my colleagues and I do at the School of Public Health at IUPUI focuses on health disparities. And one disparity that did not sit well with us was one that we found while preparing a minority disparities report for the Indiana Minority Health Coalition. And in this report, we identified a 65% higher rate of suicide attempts and a 24% higher rate of depression in Indiana Latino youth in comparison to their non-Hispanic white peers. And that was something that obviously did not sit well with us. And so at the time, we had approached the Indiana Minority Health Coalition and had inquired about community agencies that might be interested in pursuing the investigation of why depression and suicide attempts might be more prevalent in Latino youth. And that's when they referred us to the Latino Health Organization, and our partnership began. So, of course, as we know, aside from the immediate concerns about suicide, depression can also have long-term effects on youth by affecting their school performance, their social development, and their future career success. And, of course, given the rapidly growing Latino population in the state, and especially in the Indianapolis area, we thought it was very important that we address and understand these mental health disparities in our Latino youth population. And of course, in addition to the immediate and near future impacts that depression can have on youth, it's also important to note that youth depression oftentimes does carry into adulthood. Teens are also more likely to have other severe illnesses as adults, and of course, suicide attempts. But also, as we all know, depression has huge economic impacts. The CDC had reported over 200 million lost workdays several years ago, which cost employers upwards of $44 billion per year. So as I've explained, the reason for our study was that we wanted to investigate why levels of depression and suicide attempts have been more prevalent in our Latino youth in Indiana. And so we had sought the literature to look for different reasons of why this might be happening. And one thing that we came across was the idea of acculturative stress, which is the stress that an immigrant faces when they're straddling two different cultures. And at the time, it was something that really intrigued us, but more importantly, when we took it to our community partner, she would say, you know, I've never heard that term coined before, but gosh, I really see that in the families that I serve. And so we had hypothesized that acculturative stress might be contributing to these poor mental health outcomes, and then in our case, we looked at depressive symptoms. Also, we wanted to investigate different mediating factors that might be involved in this relationship. And so some of these factors that we looked at included peer support, family support, self-mastery, and perceived discrimination. So for our pilot study, we wanted to identify specifically levels and sources of acculturative stress in Indianapolis Latino youth. We wanted to investigate whether acculturative stress is predicting depressive symptoms, and we wanted to investigate possible mediators of this relationship, as I mentioned, the peer support, family cohesion, mastery, and perceived discrimination. So now to go through the methods. Of course, following IRB approval, our community partner actually took the lead in recruiting adolescents between the ages of 12 and 19 and their parents. While adolescents were the main focus of our study, we thought it was a great opportunity to also speak with the parents since they would be along to give consent for their child to participate. And so the teens that were in our study were either living in Marion County, which is the county that houses Indianapolis, or Hamilton County, which is just northeast of Marion County, and that was all based on their clientele reach. So they made phone calls, they sent out letters to community agencies and sites, and we went from there. From January to April of 2013, we collected our data. We had 8 different study events. 4 of these were in Hamilton County, and 4 were in Marion County, and each lasted about an hour and a half. So, of course, as families would arrive at our different study sessions, which were held at various churches and community centers, everything was explained in detail in Spanish, mostly because the parents spoke mostly Spanish. All the kids spoke both languages, for the most part, with a few exceptions. And so, of course, at that time, if anyone decided they did not want to participate, which never happened, they were, of course, invited to leave. And I wanted to note that parents and adolescents were then separated for the different study sessions. So what did those include? Our adolescent participants completed a packet of surveys, and they were offered surveys in English and Spanish. And the survey packets included demographics, the SAFE scale to measure acculturative stress, the PHQ-9 for depression, and other instruments to measure all of those mediating factors that I've shared with you. At the same time, parents completed focus groups that were held in Spanish, co-facilitated by our academic PI and our community PI. And in those focus groups, they talked about the perceptions of stress and sadness in their children, specifically stress that was attributed to these cultural differences, and different concerns they had about the family functioning, specific issues with their children, etc. So now, to share some of the results with you, first, let's begin with some information on our adolescent participants. Given the short span of time that we had to collect data, we were actually aiming for 60 Latino adolescents to participate in our study. But thanks to the diligence and community ties that our community partner does have, we were able to get 86 adolescents to participate and approximately 100 parents. And again, this speaks really highly of our community partner. And while we did not collect any demographic information from the parents, I did want to share some demographics from the adolescents. So as you can see, we had almost an equal split as far as location goes, as far as gender goes, which was interesting given that it is so hard to recruit males to participate in health research. So we are very pleased with that specifically. And then you can also see that we had almost an equal split of that younger adolescent age group, which we classified as 12 to 15, versus the older with 16 to 19 years. We had also, on the demographic form, asked the participants about their immigrant or generation status. And as you can see, the majority were not born here in the U.S. About one-third were born in the U.S. but had at least one parent that was not born here in the U.S. and just a few where their parents and themselves were born here in the U.S. Overwhelmingly, they chose to take our survey in English. In fact, I think we only had 3 out of the 86 that chose to take it in Spanish. They prefer to speak English with friends, but of course Spanish with their family, which was not surprising to us. So again, I'd like to call our attention back to the conceptual model here. So remember that we had hypothesized that acculturative stress might be something that's contributing to these higher rates of depression in our Latino youth in Indianapolis. And so first, I thought I would focus there and share with you what we learned about the prevalence of acculturative stress and depression in the Latino adolescents that participated in our study. And I'll tell you in advance, it's a little bit of a good news, bad news situation. So as I had mentioned, we use the SAFE scale to measure acculturative stress, and it's been previously utilized in the Latino population. And so on this 24-item scale, they would answer questions such as, it bothers me that family members I am close to don't understand my new values. And they would then select very low to very high. And sorry, I don't know why my percentages aren't showing up here, but you'll see that based on this, our teens, we thought, okay, they must be doing pretty well. We had no teens that fell into that high or very high category for acculturative stress, and the majority fell into that very low to low category. And so that's the good news, and we were surprised by this, given that over two-thirds of our participants were born outside of the U.S. I think we were expecting something a little bit different. So now let's take a look at depression. And so like I mentioned, we use the PHQ-9 for depression. And in that scale, for those of you who aren't familiar, respondents rate how often they've been feeling certain feelings, such as I've been feeling down, depressed, or hopeless, or feeling tired or having little energy. And so this is the bad news portion of my story. So in the Latino adolescents that participated in our study, nearly 60% had some form of depressive symptoms, which was obviously quite concerning to us, and it pointed out the need for effective interventions in the future or future research. As we conducted bivariate analyses with the demographic variables to measure both with levels of acculturative stress and depression, gender was actually the only demographic variable that was significantly associated with levels of acculturative stress or depression. And females, of course, reported moderate levels of acculturative stress that were higher than males and also with depression. And I point this out because I have talked about how we had the Marion County and Hamilton County, Marion County having more of an urban feel, Hamilton having more of a suburban feel. And at the time, we were actually expecting to see some significant differences there, but did not, only with gender as far as demographics go. So as I've mentioned, we started this study with one big question. Might acculturative stress be contributing to the higher rates of depression that we've seen in our adolescent Latino population in Indiana? And so based upon our study, acculturative stress is significantly associated with depression in these teens. Every participant with moderate levels of acculturative stress had some level of depression. And those with moderate levels of acculturative stress were much more likely to have major depression as well. So to test the conceptual model and to predict the experience of depression, we completed a logistic regression. And as you can see from this table here, what we found was that teens with this moderate level of acculturative stress were nearly 7 times more likely to have depressive symptoms. Those lacking high social support were over 4 times more likely, and being female, females were nearly 4 times as likely to have depression as well. We also wanted to test other measures to predict acculturative stress, and as you can see here from our logistic regression, females were nearly 3 times more likely to have those moderate levels of acculturative stress, and those without high self-mastery were nearly 6 times more likely to have those moderate levels of acculturative stress. So when we look at this all together, we find, if you think back to the conceptual model, we thought that there might be these mediating factors between the relationship of acculturative stress and depression. But in fact, it seems as if low self-mastery is actually something that predicts moderate levels of acculturative stress. So teens with low self-mastery were 6 times more likely to have the moderate levels of acculturative stress, and those teens were then 7 times more likely to have depression. To go over a few of the limitations, of course, we viewed this study as an overall success, but most of the teens that were recruited by our community partner are already usually pretty involved in the community. They're already seeking services with an organization like the Latino Health Organization, or they're involved in church. So they might not be as representative of the overall population as what we would have liked. Additionally, the questionnaire packet was quite extensive. It usually took teens at least an hour to complete, so there's definitely potential for participant burden. And of course, with some of the instruments, some were previously tested with Latinos or adolescents, but not always both, and that is also definitely a limitation here. So as we presented these results to our funders at the Indiana Minority Health Coalition, we definitely felt the need to pursue an intervention study rather than pursuing more research, knowing that the need was so great. And so that's what we've been doing now. I wanted to briefly mention that. We've created, with our community partners, an interdisciplinary one-year resilience and self-mastery building program. It begins with a summer day camp that was just implemented in June, so we're currently still in progress. And we then meet with these teens once a month for the rest of the year. The key components of the program, which is called Your Life, Your Story, include mentoring for that social support, emotionally expressive activities to help them embrace their story, and a resilience-building curriculum. So hopefully by this time next year, I'll be able to share some of those exciting results with you as well, so stay tuned. That's all I have. Any questions? Yes? We did, and we did not see statistically significant differences. That's a great point. Definitely. Yes?
Following up on that, did you have a chance to look at the ones that we integrated, the age difference makes difference in the outcome of stress? The younger kids adapting quicker or had more time to adapt, or the duration for them to adapt, have you had a chance to look at that?
You know, that was one thing that we thought of after. You know, hindsight is always 20/20, and that is something that we've seen as well. I think it's usually around the age of 12 that if you're before age 12, you tend to be a little bit better off, but that's not something that we collected. Very good point, though. Yes? Great question. And the qualitative data that we actually collected was with the parents, not the teens. I think if we were to pursue future research, qualitative data with the teens would be very interesting. Tomorrow, the academic PI for this particular study is presenting on the parent qualitative data, though. So from what the parents say, it seems that parents tend to want their families to hold on to those cultural values, where, of course, for the teens, that can be very difficult because they go to schools that are mixed with many different races, or maybe they're in a school that they're definitely a small minority. And parents typically will say, you know, I'd like you to hold on to these values, or one example was, you know, don't say the Pledge of Allegiance here because this is not your country. Mexico's your country. But for the teen, that can be very hard because maybe they came here when they were two and they feel this is their home. So that's just one example. Great question. Yeah. So this is something that I'm actually personally very interested in. I grew up in northern Indiana, Elkhart County, which has had a very high percentage of Latinos. When I was a little kid, I can remember that. And moving to Indianapolis, I could actually see differences in just cultural resources that were available, different things that you could buy in, let's say, a Walmart. So I think if we could compare to other counties in the state that are more established, that would be very interesting. Yeah.
In terms of the mastery intervention, were you developing this de novo, or were you able to find some promising models to base it off of? Because in my experience, I found a ton of research about mastery and a range of outcomes with very little intervention research.
So we use a previously developed and tested model. It's called YTRI. That's the resilience building curriculum that we utilize. And in the program, it's implemented by therapists. However, anyone can be trained in it. It's been utilized in school settings, mental health settings, and juvenile detention centers and things like that. As far as the other components, like the mentoring and the expressive activities through art and music, those are all things that we've pulled together but are all evidence-based on their own. Great question. Yeah.
So you were speaking early on about the difficulty in getting such high participation rates for studies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, too, if you would tell us some of the key elements of your events, because obviously the event was hosted by a community.
Correct.
That was highly trusted.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to know what other key elements involved in those events that increased your participation.
That's a great question. So a huge part of it is our community partner, Virna. She's super warm, super welcoming, super connected. But also, and this sounds a little silly, I think it's huge, though, offering food and drinks. We're always very, you know, we have that hospitality. We welcome families in. Everyone mingles for the first 20 minutes, and then, you know, Sylvia and I would introduce the study with Virna, and everything would be done collaboratively. So they trusted her, they felt welcomed by the group, and then they trusted us because of that.
So it was a community event that had, you know, like a community building, people came in trusted locations, you said churches
yes.
and so forth. It was a meal
yes.
and so forth. And
yeah, rather than bringing them to the university or, yeah.
And so therefore, there was some previous relationship, you were saying, also,
right.
Many of these kids and families were already connected.
Mm-hmm.
So the families that might not have been connected previously to this organization, maybe who are disenfranchised or marginalized, did not come.
Right.
Might not have participated.
Right. Yes. Right, and I'm pretty sure we did. We did these analyses over a year ago, so we've been trying to go back in and refresh ourselves, and we had so many variables. We ran everything that we could, and obviously that was something that did not come up statistically significant. But key observation there. Thank you. Yes? So the summer camp participation went very well. It was a week-long summer camp. That's the kickoff to the program. It was an 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock. Parents had to bring their kids to us. So we thought that we might lose some kids. However, we actually had a great attendance rate for that as well. A lot of community interest about the intervention. So yes, so we, as we go along, we're collecting quantitative but qualitative data with the teens as well for that. Great. Thank you.
So thank you, everyone. That concludes our session. I thank the, let's give the panel here another round of applause.